You're listening to Blackburn Nine's Breakfast Club. I'm your host, Frederick C. Blackburn, and tonight is episode 84, Ernst Zundel, Honorary Pathfinder. And if you'd like to join us, you can come out to the Trading Post chat room at bb9tradingpost.chitango.com. That's bb9tradingpost.chitango.com. And Ernst Zundel is one of those people that you're going to get a response one way or the other. People knew the name. He became very, very famous in especially the 1990s, I guess, is when he really started breaking the noise floor. And he passed this week. And at first, everybody was wondering if it was a real story or if it was bad information, because there was a possibility that there was a French story that had been mistranslated. But then it was pretty much confirmed. That he did pass on the 6th. And so, why do I think of him as an honorary pathfinder? Now, for the newbies, one of the sections we have for the second hour is called the Big Nine at Nine. And what I try to do there is bring on guests that I think are doing very, very good quality work in the truth movement. And we have nine basic questions that we call it the nine wolves named Pathfinder. The nine questions, and they can answer them however they want. And that's, but once you've answered the questions, the designation is you're the Pathfinder. And Ernst Zundel was one of those, I guess, fantasy league guests you would like to have had on your show. Kind of like I would love to have had the late, great Mr. Anthony Lawson on The Breakfast Club. I would have loved to have had Mr. Ernst Zundel, and it just never happened. But it's just with his body of work and what he went through, and literally in the hell levels of what they put this man through in those later bucket years, that he should be out spoiling his grandchildren and teaching them how to fish and things like that, not being sent to prison in solitary confinement for wrong thinking. And it just shows the ruthlessness of the Jew, that they seem to enjoy being particularly sadistic to our elders, and that they can destroy a 93-year-old beekeeper who happened to work in the bookkeeping department at the labor camp of Auschwitz, or they can throw in prison Ursula Haverbeck at 87 for questioning it, just questioning it. And with Mr. Ernst Zundel, one of the biggest charges against him was that he published someone else's work that questioned it. And what was the it was, of course, the big lie of the Holocaust. And the book that really inflamed the Jewish world powers was called Did 6 Million Really Die? And from that point on, he was a targeted individual, and he's just such an inspiration for how courageous he was and just kept fighting and to endure all that he endured. Because you think solitary confinement that is designed usually to drive people mad. And we talked about last week's show of how when the Great Experiment was being designed, one of the articles, the Eighth Amendment was very clear on cruel and unusual punishments and excessive fines, which was, you know, you can't use the law to be punitive. You know, it's the same law for everything. The judges and the jury should take everything in consideration and weigh that evidence, not because you're using the legal system to punish a particular group. And that is what we are seeing with anything to do with the Holocaust and Jewish power. They always want to make these examples of the people. And I always go back to 9/11. In the run-up to 9/11, one of the FBI agents, Mr. Robert Hansen, who was a devout Catholic FBI agent and was supposedly incorruptible by all standards, was suddenly accused of colluding with the Russians and was thrown in a hole, solitary confinement, and was completely, you know, denied any access. And Hollywood immediately made several films demonizing him, made for television type movies, and just that this person was horrible. And of course, all the evidence against him was classified. So, you know, we were never allowed to see whatever evidence because of national security. But, you know, it's always been my working hypothesis that he, like Mr. O'Neill, you know, John O'Neill, who died in 9/11, or died on 9/11 in the attacks as his first day of work, working for Jerome Hauer security there for the 9/11 complex, you know, that he was murdered, and because he was the expert on Osama bin Laden. And I think that Hansen was picking up the real story of who was going to be carrying out 9/11 and had to be silenced. That's always my hypothesis. But since you can't get access to him, you know, who knows? But, you know, this is the type of things they do. And so to put somebody like Ernst Zundel into solitary confinement for publishing a document that some group, a very small minority, a very vocal minority, a very well-funded and powerful minority, found offensive. And so in the so-called Western civilization that prides itself on free thought and exchange of ideas and multicultures, etc., that we have this one topic that will get you thrown into solitary confinement if you publish something on it is just wrong. That is should not be happening in a civilized nation of any sort that has, you know, makes any claim to having free speech. And it's always the same group that's offended, and that's the Jews, that can't stand for this topic to be discussed. It's that shut it down mentality and the ruthlessness that they go after people. Now, with me, in that facing your cognitive dissonance on the big red pill, and I considered that was the hardest red pill of, you know, relearning an event of history, because, you know, on 9/11 I said, you know, that physically couldn't happen, but it took me about a year to make the argument that it was most likely carried out by Israelis, the Israeli Mossad, working with U.S. and British intelligence and a treasonous group of Zionists and the Project for a New American Century because of the Odin-Yenin plan. And that was such a hard place to be, because at that point I didn't have a problem with Jews. So, you know, the old cliches, some of my best friends from work are Jews, some of my best friends from college were Jews, etc. And I sure didn't want to be an anti-Semite or one of those evil white racists or those KKK guys or whatever and that was, you know, the programming that suddenly you're put into this situation where the data set is beyond your worldview, and to adjust your worldview, you've got to digest that and to, you know, say, well, you know, is it all the Jews or is it just the Zionists, that kind of thing? And at the same time, just tiptoeing around all the message boards, never using the J word, always saying Zionists, et cetera, you know, and just living in fear of being called an anti-Semite. You know, that was kind of the mindset of those early days of the troll wars on the message boards. And, you know, Mr. Dennis Fetcho can tell you all about that, that, you know, it was ruthless the way these Hasbarats that were very well trained were beating us up on the message boards. And this was always the big Trump card, is if you had everybody convinced that 9/11 didn't happen the way it was supposed to, that there really was NSA spying and a backdoor to Israel, they would still say, well, what about the Holocaust? Are you going to say the Holocaust never happened next? And of course, yeah, you would always back off of that. But what happened with me was the news of Sylvia Stoles, or Stalls. And if you're not familiar with her, she was a lawyer who was representing Mr. Ernst Zundel at his 2006 trial, and she ended up having to go to jail for defending him. And that was just one of those last straws of, that is just so over the top. You don't do that. You don't throw lawyers in jail for defending somebody for having a difference of opinion than you do. And that was what happened. And so I got so upset about that, and I started just questioning this. And it was at that point that a person by the name of Denier Bud at that time started putting out a series of documentaries on questioning the Holocaust. And they were very long, several hours long, and just loaded with all of these data dots that we weren't taught in school. But these were facts nonetheless, and went through things like one-third of the Holocaust, and then the Nazi shrunken heads, and just several of the other documentaries. Then I discovered David Cole. And David Cole's 1992 documentary on Auschwitz. And what was interesting about David Cole / David Stein was he was actually Jewish. And he had been working with Ernst Zundel and had done, and I put these interviews in this week's playlist, but he was questioning Auschwitz. And Auschwitz was always key because that was where the lion's share of the Holocaust occurred, the 4 million number. So you had 4 million plus whatever else happened in all the other camps that added up to the magical 6 million number, the 6 gorillion number, the universal constant, the number that never changes. And what was so important to me about Ernst Zundel's work and the work of people like David Cole and the Lecter Report was those facts made them take down the Soviet-era plaque. Because remember, Auschwitz was overrun by the communist forces, and that's where supposedly all the gas chambers suddenly happened in the communist-occupied areas, because they never found any gas chambers in any of the areas that the Allies took control of. So, but there were all these, you know, death camps with gas chambers elsewhere in the Soviet bloc. But when the Soviet Union fell and the records were released, and based on the research of people like Ernst Zundel, they were forced to revise that 4 million number at Auschwitz down to the 1.5 million. And that was the ripple that went through the entire narrative, because, well, how can you change this by 2.5 million and still come up with the 6 million number? And that's when you start finding out that this 6 million number has been batted around basically since the first World Zionist Congress got together. And they, it's very obvious that this was part of the psychological warfare aspect of establishing themselves as the victims. Just like Sun Tzu, you know, when you're strong, appear weak. When you're weak, appear strong. So this very powerful cabal, you know, with Rothschild at the head and Warburg and all these other people, and all their media that they had bought up, started with this 6 million number of Jews perishing, and it's always perishing. You know, that 6 million Jews perished, and they have run this for hundreds of times before World War II even happened. So you see that, okay, this again is that Jewish manner of taking the narrative and making the story and all the data fit the conclusion, where they've got a conclusion and now they just need to come up with a clever story with enough information to make it interesting and keep out anything that's contradictory, and we can sell this. And that is what they've basically done. And Ernst Zundel, through his work, challenged that fundamental axiomatic argument of the 6 million number. And to me, that was what was so dangerous, that he made them change the Auschwitz plaques and recount that number. And they've been in a spin ever since trying to make up what, you know, that's that missing 2.5 million Jews. Now, of course, everybody listening to this show knows that even the Jewish almanacs reported an increase in Jewish populations after World War II, that you don't have a missing 6 million number. The Red Cross numbers are down in the 100,000 range of total people dying in those labor camps. So you see that this is a Talmudic number that they are trying to promote as part of the psychology for their greater Israel agenda, that modern Maccabee thing. It's all about creating an identity politic. And that was what was so key. And it also explains what the arguments were at those first Zionist congresses, because prior to that, what these rabbis were seeing and these rich Zionist Jews were seeing was that Jews were assimilating into European culture and leaving Judaism behind. And especially, like we've talked about, with the bedrock of Judaism being shattered by both Copernicus' work on a heliocentric versus geocentric model of the universe or the solar system, and then by the eighth planet by William Herschel being discovered, Uranus or Uranus. And so that whole geocentric seven planet Babylonian Kabbalistic Zohar model was just completely bankrupt. And Jews were assimilating, so they had to come up with a motivating factor, just like what the Maccabees had done during the Hellenistic period, because the same thing was happening, was the Jews liked the Greek lifestyle, did not like the Jewish lifestyle, and most people were happy with that except for this small group of zealots who were getting ready to lose their power system. And that's what it comes down to, is the core Jews are that power system of the banks and controlling the money supply. But if you lose your foundation, then you perish. And so we see that so much of that World Zionist Congress was to combat this rash of assimilation by Jews and forcing the Jews into becoming a cohesive global entity of the what they would become known as the international Jews, as Henry Ford called them. So that was part of the thing, is this Kabbalistic text, which is based on the numbers of how many people, how many Jews will enter into Israel. And you can see that this is kind of like just hobbled together. They need an narrative to justify moving into Palestine and setting up this greater Israel thing. And again, my working hypothesis is based on what the Knights Templars found at around 1118, of this, New World Order model, if you will, from the Copper Era. That's what I think they found, and they modeled the Knights Templars and the Freemasons after this, and international banking after this. So it's this model that they're trying to put in, and it all hinges on being able to convince the Jews that they are a unique people and they are being persecuted by all those white Europeans, and it's an existential fight. And if they don't group together and form Israel, they're going to perish. And to bring in the Messiah, they have to establish Israel and destroy all the white people. And that is basically what we're seeing with, the minutes of the First Zionist Congress, Herzl's book on the Jewish state, up through the leaked protocols, the Elders of Zion, and just, listening to these Jews in their own words. When they say that they're looking to destroy Europe and pushing for white genocide, this is what they're saying today. They're proud modern Maccabees, and they have their agenda, and people like Ernst Zundel stood in the way of that, as did Sylvia Stoltz. And so this is one of those stories that you wished had happened after the internet, because I think the Overton window globally would have shifted much faster on the question of the Holocaust had we been able to used internet technologies while this saga was playing out with Ernst Zundel. So when you look at Ernst Zundel's life, basically he was the same generation as my father. My father was born in the 1920s. Ernst Zundel was born in 1939, and he was born in Germany. He went to trade school. He, in 1956, he graduated with a graphics art degree. And that's another aspect of this where, for example, I'm going to read the this is from the Canadian Jewish Press, CBC. Okay. Now, at first, there was a complete blackout in all the Jewish media on this. Nobody was talking about it in the Zio media. The first group that I saw break the story in any big distribution was CBC out of Canada. And this is the way they describe it. Headline, Holocaust denier Ernst Zundel dead at 78. Zundel lived in Canada for decades before being extradited to Germany in 2005. A notorious Holocaust denier who lived in Canada for decades before being deported to Germany to face prosecution has died, according to a statement from his wife, Ingrid Zundel. Okay, so that first couple of sentences, a notorious Holocaust denier. This is the way the Jews always cast their spells. They immediately try to convince you to think positively or negatively about either the people they're trying to sell to you or the people they're trying to destroy. So here it's obvious that this person is the new Hitler, the new Haman. He's an uppity Amalek. He's an enemy of the Jews. You must hate him too if you're a good person. So a notorious Holocaust denier. And so that is the mindset of this. They're marketing this, that this was a bad man. But when you look at it, this was a very caring, sensitive, artistic, intellectual, philosopher type person. He was, a graphics artist. He went on to create a media outlet, and he was doing audio video work, and so he was very technical of setting up his own studio and doing his own recording. And so when I was researching this, it reminded me of how I was in the lead up to 9/11, because like I said, I had the house and the farm, but we also had the art studio set up. We had the music studio set up, had the video studio set up. So I was doing full production audio video there. And, that was part of all the equipment I lost in the Great Flood, as I called it. And so, to see this same kind of setup that he was doing to get the independent media out there before the internet. And so when you look at one of the big things the Jews didn't like about him was he was using the old independent publishing model that the Russians were using during the Soviet occupation, and he named his company Samizdat Publishers. And this was founded in 1977, and it was owned and operated by Ernst Zundel. And basically, it was based in Toronto and Ontario. And the whole model of this is basically the same model as we use with the internet, where it's distributed peer-to-peer exchange of information versus a centralized master-slave type system. And so what they were doing in the Soviet bloc was pamphleteering, and you would basically make copies of things in small runs and distribute them around like-minded individuals, but especially during the Jewish NKVD days, if you got caught with any of these publications, you usually were executed immediately. If you were caught publishing any of these, then you would probably be tortured to death. Your family, would be killed, and they would destroy everything kind of thing. It was just that ruthless Bolshevik culture against this. But that, nevertheless, did not deter these brave Russians from exchanging information. So it was the same model that Ernst Zundel was using, but he was going for a multimedia thing with this new media of video production. So for the first time, video equipment was getting down in the price range where an individual could afford to do their own video editing and audio recording. And so you could have documentaries, independent documentaries for the first time, that you didn't have to go to the Jewish Hollywood studios. You could set up a small-scale studio and do this type of work, and then set up, you know, the distribution networks. And that's what the Samizdat model was all about. And it's interesting that when the Soviet Union fell, they had adopted that model to fax machines. And so the fax machines were the distribution networks, where you basically had cells given certain number of phone numbers to call. And then you had overlaps where the information would get spread very, very rapidly, much like we do with blog pages now when a blog page goes viral or a website goes viral, et cetera. You know, that's what they were doing with this pamphleteering using fax machines. So now the I guess the big thing is, you know, when Zundel moved from Germany to Canada in 1958 and could see the changes going on in occupied Germany, and that basically that whole anti-Nazification of Germany was a demoralization cultural Marxist program to destroy the German people. Much like what we're going through in the United States. That's, you know, what they were doing to the German people. And so he was trying to wake the world up to what was going on, and that the German people should not be demonized like this. And it's like, why is this particular war so pronounced over all other historical events? And it's like the old saying, you know, methinks the Jew does kvetch too much, methinks. It's just so, you know, trying to tell the truth about what had happened in World War II and to stop this attack on the German people of this, you know, total destroying these young German kids by telling them that their parents and ancestors were monsters that did all these horrible things. And so, of course, the child's going to say, well, I don't want to be that. I reject my culture and my heritage. And so this idea of setting the record straight, and also of, you know, talking about the the atrocities of things like the Bolshevik Revolution, the 66 million Russian Christians that were killed, the Holodomor, the Armenian genocide, you know, getting that information out, you know, these are Jewish genocides going on. Why aren't these things getting any attention? And so the book, let's see here, I had this pulled up. The book, Did 6 Million Really Die?, was done in 1974. And this was the age in America of the talk shows. And you had people like Donahue that would have these morning talk shows, Montel Williams, etc. And this was the circuit that books like this were coming into. And so a lot of people are very familiar with seeing the first revisionists on daytime talk shows like Donahue, but you also saw the amount of right-thinking psychological warfare that would go into those shows, where they would bring people out like David Cole to talk about his documentary, and then they would attack him and spin it to make it you know, that this person's a nut job and this is just bad. You shouldn't even be asking this. And they'd always have the Jews in the audience that would stand up and give their eyewitness testimony about how their mothers were built into lampshades and their father was a bar of soap and their sister was a pelvis ashtray, etc. And that, you know, you could tell the different ethnicities because of the different smoke at Auschwitz. And the audience would, of course, be applauding these people and booing the revisionists for wrong thinking. And that was the whole thing. And, of course, that would relay into the American living room to the people watching that, that, oh, well, I want to be like the right-thinking people. So, yes, I guess people like Ernst Zundel and David Cole are just crazy anti-Semites, etc., even though Cole's Jewish. So he's one of those self-hating Jews. So that's where you would start seeing these books. But what I remember as a kid was just how much these people were attacked by the Jewish media. And the way they just didn't stand a chance going onto that platform, going onto that Jewish stage. But the thing about the media revolution of things like Samizdat and these other independent media outlets that were growing at that time was suddenly you didn't have the monopoly. And that is what has shook Jewish power in the United States, especially over the last 10 years, is they don't have the monopoly on the narrative anymore like they did in the 1970s and 1980s when these people were trying to present this information. And so the 6 million really, did 6 million really die? The Truth at Last was written by Richard Verrill under the pseudonym of Richard N. Hardwood, and it was published by Ernst Zundel in 1974. And he was a member of the British National Front, which, you know, so many people are going back now and seeing how much England has changed, and especially London has changed, because of this invasion, that it's not an English city anymore, not an English country anymore, and realizing that people from the National Front were telling them the truth and they were trying to warn them. And, you know, now we see the new norm, you know, of course, the abnormal invaded London that's, you know, basic police state slash third world country. And that's what the Jews want. But, you know, these people were trying to warn and trying to stave off this propaganda push of the Holocaust narrative, because they could see it was really ramping up. And so many people talk about this, that, you know, right after the war and in the 1950s and 60s, you really didn't see so-called Holocaust education, Holocaust publishing, Holocaust after Holocaust movie on TV, etc. But in the 1970s, it just really started ramping up, and people were seeing the claims and saying, well, that's not how it happened. That's war propaganda. That's war atrocity propaganda. And when they would try to set the record straight, they would be smacked down by this Jewish power elite. And they were like, well, we're just being academics here. We're being historically accurate. And that's where everybody started seeing the double standards of how Holocaust issues were being treated by these Masonic compromised Jewish courts and how any other subject was being handled. And you know, these so-called show trials were just like what the Bolsheviks were doing in Russia, where they were putting these people on trial, and again, it was like a star chamber justice system. And one of the things that is so telling about Ernst Zundel is part of his arrest system was so extra constitutional by all stretches of the imagination, by any system of law, to be basically a star chamber justice system where you know, he was not getting due process. He was being shanghaied basically by the Star Chamber justice system. And, you know, later this is all exposed, but the damage is done. The man has spent years in solitary confinement in prison. So that was basically the big start of this was, you know, did 6 million really die? Just really hitting at that number. And when you think by the 90s, that plaque had been changed at Auschwitz because of that challenging of the 6 million number and people, you know, really looking at this and not giving the Jews the benefit of the doubt and applying the scientific principles and investigation to this and basically just math, you know, just the outrageous claims of this system that supposedly developed to exterminate European Jews did not exist. And they just kept making it more and more sensational. But the more you try to make something sensational, you know, once people start questioning it, the quicker it starts falling apart. And in 1992 is when David Cole met Ernst Zundel at Auschwitz and did the interviews, and that was the same time that David Cole was doing his documentary. Now, when he, as a self-hating Jew, as they're called, he learned a lot about Mishira Talmudic law and what happens if you go against this criminal gang called organized Jewry. And so he released his film in 92, and he had to go into hiding after he was hounded by the Jewish Defense League, especially Irv Rubin, who put out a contract hit on him. And so he had to go underground and create a new identity as David Stein. And then he was outed from that by another Jew, which got everybody back on him's case. He's still out there trying to poke holes in the Holocaust narrative. One of the things he exposed not too long ago was what he referred to as the Holocaust Museum caper, where he forced them to take down a Polish film that they were using to try to sell the idea of these so-called Nazi gas vans. And the footage that the Holocaust Museum was using was actually from this made-up Polish movie called The Ambulance. And they were trying to pass this off as real footage of real gas vans, and he basically exposed it, and they had to pull that from the displays. So needless to say, he was not very well liked in Jewish circles after that. But, you know, so that, I think, you know, that 92 movie really makes people start questioning the whole Auschwitz narrative, and then, you know, being forced to change the number, that definitely had a ripple effect. But what was so hard to fathom was how much people hang on to this Holocaust narrative because of the cognitive dissonance. This has been so emotionally programmed from such an early age that people usually will reject any information to say that 6 million didn't die. That, you know, the poor, poor Jews, of course 6 million died. Only bad people question that. You know, so many people still hold on to that, and they're really trying to keep that protected by keeping all this other information away from the dialogue. But they're, you know, of course, thanks to the internet, they're really losing that control. And of course, one of the things about defeating a Jew and the whole structure is that they're just going to come back at you later, more fortified. And that's what basically happened in the 2003 time period, where he was in prison from 2003 to 2005 in solitary confinement. And they described Ernst Zundel as a terrorist state enemy of Canada. And so you can see that they're just, grasping at straws, trying to demonize this person. So when you describe somebody as a terrorist state enemy of the nation because they published a book that questions something that happened in another country decades ago, how could that possibly make you an enemy terrorist, right? And the other aspect of this was that he was inciting hate against an identifiable group. And that, again, is trying to use that compromised court system to punish your enemies. And so this idea of a judge telling somebody that, oh, you're basically doing hate speech against this innocent group of people that has been persecuted for the last 2,000 years by the likes of you, and we're social justice warriors, so we're going to stand up for the victims. And that's that Jew claiming the victim high, moral high ground, and the poor researcher there with the facts and the science is being shamed and punished. And this is how backwards this is. And that's, you know, a problem with these compromised systems that defies logic and reason, because you have a conclusion that then you make everything else fit. And so that's what they basically did to Ernst Zundel. They couldn't refute his arguments. The UN had Jews, eyewitness Jews, saying that what he said was true, that there were no gas chambers. Of course, all of that is scrubbed. And the infamous line was, in the Zunt's history, was, truth is no defense when you're talking about the Holocaust. And that just really pushes forward the level that the Jews need the Holocaust narrative to justify the entire Greater Israel agenda, the Odin-Yenin plan, etc. If the Holocaust narrative falls apart, then the rest of it all falls apart. But that is the toughest part of the cognitive dissonance to get people past. They might listen to you about 9/11. They might listen to you about the USS Liberty. They might even listen to you about World War I and the Versailles and the Balfour Agreement, and the Versailles Treaty and the Balfour Agreement. But when you go to World War II and the Holocaust, it's that, of course, it happened the way the TV said, or they wouldn't be able to tell it if that wasn't the case. That's kind of the mindset that, of course, it's true. It was on TV. That cognitive dissonance is really ingrained heavily. But thanks to these great pathfinders like Ernst Zundel and even David Cole and Sylvia Stoles that are pushing that and suffering, it's really, you know, a type of martyrdom in the truth community. These people will suffer the slings and arrows for the truth and suffer the consequences. And so many people are inspired by that, that our numbers just keep growing exponentially every day of people waking up and then wanting to level up. And that's why they come to us to say, okay, I'm ready for more information. I'm starting to question this whole thing. So tell me about this, this, and this, and this. And that's what we're seeing, this great awakening, especially after the meme wars of 2016. That is just a completely different ball game now. The battlefield has changed. The old media is a laughingstock. These Jewish-controlled courts and legislative bodies are a laughingstock. People are catching on that the system's compromised. It is not operating as designed. It's operating by this hidden hand agenda, which is the trademark of that Leviathan throughout history. That's why these people have been thrown out of over 395 countries in the last 2,000 years. But yet they always claim to be the innocent victim because it puts them at a strategic advantage over the gullible Europeans that feel they always have to stick up for the underdog and help the victims, etc. And they're waking up, though, to seeing that they've been played. And, you know, then now they're suffering the consequences because they trusted the Jews, and now their countries are being destroyed by Jewish power. So they're waking up and wanting to fight back. And one of the biggest weapons we have is the truth. Simple truth and just the logical reasoning of why the Holocaust narrative does not hold water, why the 9/11 narrative does not hold water, and why it's important that you see the global aspirations of this world Zionist group and how they have been manipulating all of these European Western civilization nations to do their bidding. And at the same time, working for not only the detriment of the people, the Europeans, but the total destruction and demise of the European peoples. And so it becomes an existential fight for European survival. And this is what people are waking up to. And it was interesting to watch how the mainstream media, the Jewish media, try to sit on the story and not release it. But at the same time, the new media of the internet, this news spread like wildfire that Ernst Zundel had died. And you just saw all these people coming out in support of this man and his works. And at the same time, you really got to see the Jewish personality come out. I got so many out-and-out death threats, basically, for some of my tweets about this, where I was just saying, you know, this person has passed. And these, yeah, Antifa types and Zionist types and Jewish supremacist types were just sending me all these hate mails and hate tweets about how I should follow my leader and all fascists need to die, et cetera. And, you know, it's good that this person's dead and they're celebrating. And, you know, so that just shows what they think of free speech and what they think of science and what they think of civilized, rational discourse. And you see that they are against all of it. They want a Jewish supremacist, globalist police state, and they want us destroyed, and they want anybody who challenges their narrative destroyed. And I thought that from our perspective, Miss Carolyn Yeager, in her announcement of Ernst Zundel dying, this is how hers reads. "It is with great, great sorrow that I bring the very tragic news of the very heroic German Holocaust investigator Ernst Zundel, with two major court trials in Canada back in 1985 and 88, as I just got off the phone with his sister in Germany, that he is in fact and had a very unfortunate just passed away yesterday, Saturday, August 5th. May God bless his soul for his lifelong struggles in the defense of his people and folk, and may God protect his loving wife, Ingrid. Unfortunately, as of this moment, I have no details to the cause of the passing. We'll do my best to find out." and about such a great loss to thee and our cause. And so this was the sentiment that I saw spreading throughout the internet, and that the Jews, when confronted with that, just really showed what a sadistic, cruel people they are. And that, like I said, they have no respect for history or science or truth. And that, I guess, was the big takeaway from how they treated the passing of Ernst Zundel. And, you know, like I said, I thought he was a credible man who did some very, very good work in the face of incredible adversaries that were out to destroy him. And so with that said, just a big salute. And Ernst Zundel, you know, thank you for all you did. I think you opened the eyes of many, many people. So you have been listening to Blackburn Nine's Breakfast Club. I'm your host, Frederick C. Blackburn. I'd like to thank everyone for coming out to the Trading Post this evening. And until next time, I will see you all at the rendezvous.